This is episode 8 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk about Solace for Tired Feet. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I'm glad I don't have a braless 17-year-old traipsing through my house.
Gosh, that would be awkward, wouldn't it?
That would be not so good. And that, I mean, I don't necessarily wouldn't mind, but someone across the table from me probably would.
Girlfriend needs to get a bra. I know that maybe family life isn't going so well, and that's why she's having a sleepover every single night. But Jill needs to take her bra shopping and probably get her a hoodie sweatshirt.
It's just a giant tease, I think. I honestly think that she is really trying to tempt Kevin, American Beauty style.
Oh, gosh. She needs to calm down.
And like, she's really doing it. And like, she's trying to act all mature and everything. And, oh, Mr. Garvey, would you like coffee? And all that crap. And then here she is walking, guns a-blazing right here, totally headlamps, totally lit up, no problem, braless.
I'm just more upset because she's always wearing like a cutoff shirt, you know, showing off her little midriff, and yet every scene we see her in, pretty much, she's eating. If I ate all the time, I couldn't show my midriff. I mean, I don't even eat all the time, and I still don't want to show my midriff right now. So she needs a bra, and
she eats sexy, too. Did you notice that?
God, everything about this girl, she just needs to calm down and go to college.
Oh my God.
She just needs to leave.
Just get out of the guy's house, will you?
Just leave Kevin alone. I agree. So aside from this braless 17-year-old, Blake, what did you think about this week's episode?
Really liked this episode. I remember last podcast, I talked about how the show was finally taking the mythology and moving on. And it really did that with this episode. It took everything that it's built and it's transitioned it from, oh, these are the characters, this is what's happening, and now it's pushing the story forward unto itself. I didn't like it as much as Guest, and I definitely didn't like it as much as the Reverend episode, Two Boats and a Helicopter, but I did like it a lot. I think it was probably the second best episode, in my opinion.
I don't think your math is working. Okay,
So there you go, the third. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's like, it's 8:45. I haven't slept in a long time. Give me a break.
All right. Well, what did we miss from last week that we want to make sure we touch upon from last week's episode? Guest.
The first thing and the only thing that I really felt like we missed was Wayne prophesizing his own death. And I don't know how we missed that.
Probably because I don't give two flying Fig Newtons about Wayne.
You just said Fig Newton again.
Because I didn't want to swear. Because, I mean, I know that people get excited when I swear, but I just don't feel okay with it.
Frank Stickler would be very disappointed in you right now.
I know. I'm sorry, Frank. Fig Newton. I get that Wayne's like a big deal. I really do. And especially after this episode, I get it. I just don't like Wayne and anything that comes out of his mouth. He's just a big, weird, lying, creepy man.
I thought you were going to do it. I thought you were going to swear.
No, I said lying and creepy.
You know, I think that we were just really excited about that scene with Nora and Wayne. Like we said in the last podcast, that was the best scene in the whole show. Like, without question, that was the best scene in my eyes. If someone wants to tell me otherwise, I'm totally willing to listen. But the beauty of that scene was fantastic.
What did he say? How did he prophesize his own death? This is how little I cared about Wayne. I didn't even care or hear. I just saw what he did with Nora.
No, he just talked about how he's seen his own death. He's prophesized it in his dreams. And that this was Nora's last chance to actually use his ability to get rid of her pain. And finally, I think that was the thing that made her convinced she had to go in for the magic fucking hug. And she did. And obviously, apparently, actually, it has seemed to work.
Girlfriend's smiling, I'll tell you what.
Oh, man. Well, would you be smiling if you had JT waking up in your bed?
I'm not going. I'm going to plead the fifth.
Yeah, okay. Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, the title for this week was Solace for Tired Feet.
What do you got, honey? What do you think?
What does solace mean? I mean, I feel like, okay, I really should have looked that word up, but doesn't that mean like you get a rest?
Yeah, it's rest. It's, you know, it's like catharsis.
That's another big word. Like rest. Like you're getting a little
R&R. You
didn't
do too well on the SATs, did you?
I'm a new mom. I did better than you on the SATs.
Apparently not, because I know these words and you don't.
I gave birth and you didn't. Bring it. Okay, so I see. I do know solace means rest. For tired feet, rest your feet, tired person. I don't know who the hell rested their feet in this episode. Everyone was running around, almost dying in a fridge, having sex. Nobody was resting. You know who was resting? The mayor. She was like, he's not here. I don't care about him. He's
not
coming
anymore.
After you. Whatevs. I'm going to go have some solace for my tired feet because I'm the mayor.
So you think it's about the mayor then?
Not at all. I think that this should say no solace for tired feet. There should have had a word no in front of this title.
Well, I wholeheartedly disagree with you.
Who got to rest? Wayne on his butt in his brown underwear? Who buys brown underwear?
Well, maybe you buy brown underwear. Maybe they... You know what I think actually happened with that?
Was it so dirty?
It's so dirty that he has brown underwear. Like,
no.
He's actually took a giant deuce.
I think they wanted us to think he was naked, kind of.
Well, they definitely alluded to that in the beginning.
But he wasn't. He was just wearing brown underwear. Maybe he has it in his actor claws that you can't see his bum.
Again, he wasn't wearing a shirt, by the way. Did you notice that?
It's too hot. Wherever he is underground, it's just too hot.
I'm
for
telling
Wayne.
You, this guy has it in his contract that he is not allowed to wear a shirt. He never wears a shirt. I've never seen it.
I have. Have you ever seen brown underwear for boys?
No, not. I'm not.
Like,
gonna
where
lie,
do boys buy brown underwear?
Couldn't even tell you.
Brownunderwear.com. I'm going to look it up right now.
Brownunderwear.com probably does exist. I wouldn't be surprised if it does.
It's probably actually some weird, freaky, like, fantasy site.
Seriously, if any of you listeners have brown underwear, please let me know. I only have gray,
black. You can still buy the domain. Brownunderwear.com. It's still available. Swear to God.
I wonder what it costs.
Probably $10. It's on GoDaddy. Anyway, what do you think this episode meant, Solace for Tired Feet?
I think that it was catharsis for both the Garvey boys. And I don't mean Tom. I mean Senior and Junior. Senior eventually gets catharsis when he convinces Kevin that he has to accept the responsibility that the voices are telling him.
He didn't convince him.
No, he didn't convince him, but he opened up an opportunity to do that. And you saw that when Junior brought him back to the insane asylum, you could see that the wall that he's created to prevent Senior from getting in has kind of fallen down a little bit. And he even admitted so to Nora when they got done banging.
She's like, I'm crazy, girl.
He's like, I think I'm going nuts. And of course, she laughed about it. And we kind of laughed too. It was funny.
Well, because Nora's nuts too.
That's what I'm saying. But I think it opened it up. He stopped taking drugs. He stopped getting all that stuff that muddled everything about him.
However, his drugs were helping him sleep. He is not getting any solace. Once again, no solace.
No, but
who Senior, made up this title? I need to send them a text.
Senior is getting solace out of this.
Oh, okay.
Because he has fulfilled his purpose. And honestly, I actually think Junior is getting some solace out of this now.
I mean, he had a great time resting in bed with Nora.
Oh, no, he wasn't resting. No, that sex scene was phenomenal, by the way.
I don't know. It was a little aggressive for my taste.
No, you see, like, I liked how it was kind of soft, and then Nora was like, yeah, big fella, get that shit ready to go.
Anyway,
what I'm saying is I think Junior is finding solace. I think he has gone around, he has been living his life, and he's been putting up facades, and he's been trying to pretend that his life is just normal. With his daughter, with his son, with the fact that his wife is in the GR. But man, it's got to be a lot of freaking weight to be carrying around. And finally, he's getting rid of the drugs. He's seeing some purpose. I mean, think about this. Honest to God. Yeah, he is the chief of police. But we all know that his father was the chief of police. He probably got the job because his father was banging the mayor. And they needed somebody to step in. And what's he doing the whole time? It's in this little town. He ain't got to worry about anything. He's worrying about finding baby Jesus, you know? He's worried about finding Dean the dog killer. He's worried about his own crap. There's no purpose there. It just he's just running around. And now he's finally got purpose. And he can sit down and say, all right, I know what I'm doing. Here I go. And that's why I think that this title the show was titled Solace for Tired Feet.
And I will stick to my guns. It should have had the word no in the beginning.
Let's get to the recap.
Let's talk about this episode recap.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
Okay. You know what? These teenagers in Mapleton, they need to get what?
Seriously. Like, they need to, like, calm down.
They need to have sports. Like, did their sport and music program get cut from the high school? Because they need some after-school activities. Seriously, this is why kids join gangs. This is why kids play video games and rot their brains. And this is why they get locked in refrigerators and almost die.
Well, because they're so unfeeling. They're looking for anything to do.
They need a music teacher.
They need a gym teacher. They need a baseball team.
Yes.
Do you think the ping pong boys do anything other than just oogle after?
Well, they must. Maybe
Jill.
They have a ping pong team. Right?
Yeah.
How did they even get that nickname, ping pong?
They asked them if they wanted to play ping pong in the pilot episode.
Yeah.
You remember that? You want to go play ping pong, guys?
Like,
in my Prius?
Who has a ping pong table? Well, obviously, they're not playing ping pong. These people like to do crazy things, like lock each other in a refrigerator. How sad is that departure, by the way, that some kid was locked in this fridge? Talk about Punky Brewster. Like, did these people not see that episode of Punky Brewster where Sherry almost died? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Not at all.
Are you kidding me? It was one of the most traumatizing Punky Brewster episodes ever. Only second to the really weird one where Punky like pretty much tripped on some Native American stuff and there was a spider that almost ate her and she talked to like this Native American pumpkin.
Time out. There was really a Punky Brewster episode like that?
Everyone who like I tell this to thinks I'm crazy, and then if you Google like messed up Punky Brewster episode, it's gonna come up. It was the scariest. There were like dead kids in it, and the spider was trying to kill Punky. It was like Lord of the Rings, but Punky Brewster. She was in a cave. There was like a I don't even know. Anyway, the second scariest episode is when, sure enough, someone like gets stuck in it's Punky's best friend. Do you remember Punky's best friend?
No.
Okay, anyway, she gets stuck in a fridge and almost dies, and they learn CPR. That was, like, the thing about Punky Brewster that week, is, like, please learn CPR and, like, don't get locked in a fridge. Obviously, these kids in Mapleton don't watch Punky Brewster.
Oh, they're too busy watching Perfect Strangers, which, by the way, I was so glad that it showed back up again in this episode.
So Jill and her friends play this stupid game. Let's lock ourselves in a fridge because some poor kid was beat up and bullied into this fridge and then he departed and they never found him again. So Jill, you know, they're idiots. It's an old fridge and she gets stuck inside of it and suddenly her grandpa saves her. Kevin Garvey Sr. in his little robe. Why is he in a robe? Because he's supposed to be in the loony bin.
That's what happens when you're in the loony bin. You wear robes.
People need to watch out for this guy because he's obviously like a MacGyver. They need to not let Kevin Garvey Sr. just trounce around. I don't know any of those
trance.
Words. He whatever he is, he can't just walk around like that. So anyway, he somehow knows. Once again, I'm going to say that. Somehow knows that he needs to go to this random spot in the woods and let his granddaughter out of a locked fridge. How the heck did he open that fridge? That was a locked fridge.
Did you see how jacked he is? Like, seriously, that Scott Glenn, that's the guy who plays Kevin Sr. That guy is freaking ripped.
Yeah, and crazy people actually usually get like this amount of adrenaline, testosterone, all these things. Like, you don't mess with crazy people because they are stronger than you can even imagine.
I'm telling you, he probably bit off
the door of the refrigerator. He's that strong.
Went full T-Rex mode.
Oh my goodness.
Like, I couldn't believe how freaking jacked Scott Glenn still is. Like, I remember him from Backdraft. I remember him from Urban Cowboy. And like, except for the fact that he has a few wrinkles, it's the same exact guy. He's enormous. He's in really good shape. I wish when I'm 74, I look as that good. I'm not kidding.
I don't think I looked that good in like my pageant days.
No, you. Well, actually, I don't know. I wasn't there for those.
Oh, too bad. Anyway, love the relationship between the grandfather and the granddaughter.
Yeah, like she kind of loves him and she kind of like...
Yeah, she knows he's a little crazy. And I like what she asks her dad, like, "Hey, Dad, did Grandpa hurt people?" And he's like, "Yeah."
"Yeah, I did, actually."
And she's like, "Oh, crap." Great. And then the next day, she's like, "Hey, Grandpa, you're hanging out with my crazy dog that needs a bath. Like, he needs to go to Scrub-a-Dub Dog or whatever those little, like, pet clo, wash him down, brush him places.
That dog just needs to go away.
This is not helping me want a dog ever. Like, this show, all these dogs are freaking mean. Anyway, I loved them sitting and chatting and being kind of normal, even though she knows her grandpa's a little odd. Mm-hmm. I also love that she read his note and stole Ping Pong's credit card to mm-hmm. buy the magazine that he wanted. Anyway, I'm jumping all over the place. So Kevin, the middle Kevin, Kevin Jr.
Yeah, we'll call him Junior from now on.
Okay, Junior. All right, Kevin Jr., a.k.a. Hot Guy. He decides... "You know what, Nora? We've been going on several dates." And she says, "Honey, come on over. Let's get it on." They're about to go get it on, except the guilty remnant is outside of Nora's house. Now, are they there for Nora or are they there for Kevin?
Oh, I think that they are there to bust balls. For both of them.
Oh, goodness gracious, Liv Tyler.
I know. Come on. You're better than that, right?
Why was her outfit a little shiny? Like, I feel like she got, like, the bedazzled. It was, like, almost a little silver metallic-y instead of white. Did you notice there was a little sheen?
I'm not going to lie. I didn't. But I'm going to trust that you did. And I'm going to believe you.
It was a little shiny. And I was like, I bet Liv asked. I bet she said, "Listen, I don't do white. I'm Liv Tyler." It needs to have a little bit of a sheen.
I like how they're trying.
Like a little elven glow.
I like how they're trying to, like, ugly her up. You know, in the GR.
It's not working.
It ain't working, dude.
Goodness.
She's too pretty to be uglied up.
Nora, holy super soaker.
Oh, this was so freaking clutch. I laughed my balls off when I saw what she did to Liv Tyler.
I love that she just had it there, you know, just in case they're hanging out. She's like, "You know what? Here's how did she have that much pressure out of her hose? Because my hose, I'm lucky if it, like, does a little dribble. That was like a fire hose."
Me too.
Oh, watch it. Who has a fire hose attachment?
Yeah, you walked right into that one.
I'm just not perverted.
Okay.
They don't get it on,
right,
because that was like, that became a dribble for them, I guess. It was a total Debbie Downer.
Just stop saying the word dribble. I can't take it.
Okay. All right. And,
it's like, you know, it's like when you're in church and you can't stop laughing. That's how I feel.
No,
right now.
That's never happened to me.
Oh, God.
So Kevin then finds out that Kevin Sr. is running amok in his flannel nightgown robe, beautiful thing. And he goes and he's like, "All right, guys, let's go cop people. We're going to go get this guy and we're going to, like, look around for him." And then they're like, "What if he's about to hurt someone?" And he's like, "Take care of it.
Just call me, you know, or, like, stop him." That's what he
ends up saying. Yeah, stop him. I liked that because it was very vague. It wasn't like shoot him. It wasn't like take force if you need to. It was just really vague. Stop him. And then they spread out over town, but the first place they go is they head on over to the mayor's house, Mayor Lucy.
Don't you blame her? Wouldn't you, like not blame them for doing that?
No, of course. They're supposed to. That's his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Except
maybe not. Yeah.
So I loved how, like, two guys went around the back, and Kevin's there, and he's like, "Hey, Mayor Lucy, where's my dad?" And she's like, "Whatever. That man's fucking crazy, all right? He does not come here anymore. I haven't spoken to him in a month." And Kevin's like, I think Kevin was offended for his dad.
I would be too. Like, you just called my dad nuts. It's one thing for me to call my dad nuts, but you can't be doing that.
And you knew he was nuts. Mm-hmm. It's not like he just became nuts last month, girl. He's been crazy for a while.
Her excuse was, "Oh, you can ignore the crazy for only so long."
Except Mayor Lucy, when she's like, "He's not coming for me, he's coming for you." What do you know, Mayor? Why are you like, "He is not coming for me, he's going to come look
for
you"?
I'm sure they probably had conversations in the loony bin where he was like, "I need Junior. I need him on my side. I need him to, you know, get his shit together so that, you know, for whatever reason..." I'm sure she probably knows about that.
Kevin then goes home. His stupid alarm on his door is beeping again, and we don't know if it's on or off. He takes off, like, a bajillion guns, and he goes upstairs.
No, he stays downstairs.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
On the couch.
And he's like this weird thing where he, like, turns on his phaser. What are those? Super phaser tasers? I don't know. Don't tase me, bro.
What the hell are you?
He had a gun. He had his walkie-talkie, and then he had, like, a taser. And then when he heard the door knock, he probably thought it was his dad, so he grabbed the taser, not the gun.
Well, no, no, no. He didn't hear the door knock. He heard scratching at
the door. Yeah, but I mean, his dad's crazy. Like, he could have thought it was his dad. But why would he take a taser? Unless he thought it was... Like, why would he not grab a gun? I think he took a taser because he didn't want to, like, kill
his
dad.
I'm not confident that it was a taser.
What was it then?
I don't know.
It was either, like, a recording device or a taser.
Well, he had his walkie-talkie.
His gun,
and he had something else. Maybe it was a taser. I don't know. Maybe it was a taser because he doesn't want to off his dad.
That's what I just said. Booby trap.
God, I love the Goonies.
I know.
Look, I think this scene was really cool, and it showed Kevin how tired he was and how ready he was for his dad. He just sat there and prepared for it. And then you see him fall asleep briefly. Like, you just see his eyes flutter a little bit, and then you hear the dog scratching at the door.
I hate dogs once again. This is not helping the cause.
So now, when is the dream sequence that we all know that happened? When is that beginning? Is the dog real?
Yeah, the dog's in his backyard and everyone's telling him
No, no, but the dog wasn't in the backyard originally.
You can't shove a dog in a mailbox. So no, that dog was not real.
Well, but maybe the dog was at the front door.
Yeah, I believe that there was definitely a dog outside, but it wasn't in a mailbox.
Well, no, of course it wasn't in the goddamn mailbox.
Well, that's what they showed.
Well, that's part of the dream sequence. That's why I'm saying, when did the dream sequence begin? Was it when Kevin... like kind of like opened the door and then realized that there was no dog there. It was just Dean, the dog killer.
Yeah.
Is that when it started?
Yeah, when he opened the door.
Because I feel like Jill said, oh, I'm surprised. I'm sorry, not Jill. Amy said to Jill, I'm surprised you didn't wake up when the dog was here.
Yeah, there definitely was a dog.
Was definitely there.
I think he like was sleepwalking and somehow caught a dog. But I don't think that the weird, creepy, bald guy, Dean, I don't think Dean was there.
Oh, hell no. He wasn't there.
No, but I bet Kevin walked out with a gun, a taser. I don't even know. But Kevin definitely had to go out and get that dog. But it was not in the mailbox. And the bald guy wasn't there either. And because then Tom was there at his door. So that was all a big dream.
So let's just talk about this. Yeah. So we have Tom who shuts the door. Maybe that's symbolizing the fact that Tom felt like his dad abandoned him. And then we have Kevin walking out, Junior walking out to see the creepy dog shooter guy. And he's like, hey, I got one trapped in the box here. Why don't you shoot it? And then
he walks by his truck and sees all these guilty remnant people shot in the head, including his wife.
Exactly. And then he says, shit, I can't shoot these dogs anymore. I don't want to shoot them anymore.
Anymore? Did he actually say anymore?
I don't know. But he definitely did say, I don't want to shoot them.
Okay.
I can't shoot them. Dean said he had dogs in the back of his truck.
But it was a guilty remnant.
So now, is this a little bit on the nose here? Are they really trying to say that the guilty remnant are the dogs?
I don't know. It was a dream and it was a little messed up. But what I didn't like is all the cuts. Because first, Kevin was holding Dean's big long gun.
Yep.
Then Kevin was shooting the other dog with his little gun that didn't exist because he had a taser in his hand. And then he's back because they cut to him shooting a dog with his little gun.
Yeah, remember they cut to him in the pilot and when he's shooting the dogs originally with the little gun. And then they keep cutting back and forth between the dogs eating the deer.
Oh, if you remember that.
It was like
gross.
Those real quick cuts.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a dream sequence.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Okay, yeah.
But there definitely was a dog because then the dog was in the backyard and it bit his arm.
And his hand was all screwed up. And apparently, Amy helped him out.
Nurse.
She nursed him to health. Like, again, this is the whole thing. Like, she's trying to be like all like super like mature for Kevin Jr. And like she's like teasing him like, you don't remember what happened last night, do you?
Well, so it leads me to wonder, what is Kevin like? Like, is it obvious that he's maybe sleepwalking? So when Kevin does these weird things that he doesn't remember, does Amy know he's like sleepwalking or sleep catching a dog?
I don't know. I'm not sure if she knows.
Why would she ask otherwise?
Something tells me that she doesn't know because, again, she did ask. Like, oh, you don't remember last night. And part of me feels like that's her teasing him again. Again, no bra. And she's like, oh, you don't remember what happened last night, do you?
Which, when they teased that in the previous week trailer, it made it look like they slept together.
That's what I'm saying. All right, and can we all put this to bed for now?
What?
Amy is not sleeping with Kevin. Kevin did not cheat on Lori with Amy.
No.
I've heard a bunch of people say this. I seriously want you to picture this. Amy is 17 years old at the very most. She's at least 16, at most 17, right? 3 years prior, we all know what Kevin was doing during the departure. He was getting it on with somebody. Let's do the quick math here. If Amy is 17, how old is Amy 3 years prior?
14, possibly even 13, based upon when her birthday is.
You don't know. Maybe she's an August birthday. Who knows?
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is they ain't banging. And I'm so tired of people trying to tell me that Kevin is sleeping with Amy now. He slept with her during the departure. Okay. They're not going to show that on TV. So that's just practical reasons, number one. Okay. They are not going to have Kevin sleep with a 17-year-old or 16-year-old on national television. It's not going to happen. So let's get that over with. But in terms of the story itself, it doesn't make sense. It's okay that she wants to tempt him. I've got no problem with that. That's what girls do. Some of them, that's what they do. They're bitches. But the actual act, it's not going to happen. So can we just put this to bed, this whole notion?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. I've heard it on some podcasts and some articles, and it's really bothered me. I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of reading about it.
You know who's tired too?
Who?
Kevin.
Which one?
Junior.
Okay.
He's like, Amy, why are you asking me questions? Do you like being here?
That was awesome. It was like saying it without saying it.
Yeah. He's pretty much like, you eat all my ice cream. Like, you're always eating ice cream, and you're always watching TV, even when my daughter isn't here. Do you like living here?
And he's like, we like you living here. Do you like living here? And it's basically like, Amy, shut the fuck up. Stop getting in my business.
Yeah, goodness.
Otherwise, I'm going to kick you the hell out.
So Kevin Jr. gets a phone call from his cop buds, and they're like, hey, we found your dad, and he busted my face.
Dude.
He really likes libraries. And by really, I mean not, since he burned one down, and now he's just destroyed another one. So he goes, and sure enough, his buddy's like, your dad really liked me, I thought. Now my nose is broken.
And he smoked Dennis.
You gotta watch it. I'm telling you, crazy people are strong. Dennis should have known better. He should have just texted him. I've been like, hey guy, how's it going?
I just think that's got Glenn is strong. I think that's a thing.
So he ruined this library a bit. He was searching on the computer. He was asking for money because he needs to get something for his son. And do you like how all those National Geographics were just thrown everywhere?
I know. I thought that was great. Like, I really thought that it was just coincidence. Of course, we ended up finding out that it's not just a coincidence. He's looking for a specific National Geographic, right?
Does anyone out there have this exact National Geographic?
I looked this up like on eBay and online. I'm telling you, I swear to Christ, all of the ones that are that were available now are no longer available.
Why?
They've all been bought.
Like as of last night when people saw this?
I don't know if it was as of last night. I'm just saying that you literally cannot buy this on the internet anymore. It cannot happen.
I believe it, but there are some people out there who may not even know, and they have serious National Geographic collections. My family used to hold on to those things for years. I mean, they make pretty cool bathroom reading. Anyway, so Kevin goes, and he's like, crap, my dad's totally looking for me. And
he ends up getting a phone call from Jill.
Saying Grandpa's here.
Yeah, and Grandpa ends up showing up, and he's trying to fight the dog to get the money underneath the grill, right?
I loved that fight scene.
He's got like the
trash can
the trash
cover,
thing,
and he's wrestling with his robe, and what the heck was he doing with the dog? Was he trying to get the money?
He was trying to get the money.
Why?
Because he needs the money.
To buy National Geographic from whom? This, you know what? This guy is so old. He was probably on the computer on eBay, and it was like $200. And he's like, okay, I need $200. Doesn't understand that you need a credit card or PayPal or something. So he's like, oh, I know there's lots of money. Where are you going to buy this magazine for $200? You're old. You need to get a credit card and PayPal.
Can we just talk about how cool it was when Jill saw the grandfather and she's like, oh, there's Grandpa.
Fighting a dog.
Wow. And then she goes outside. She's like, hey, are you hungry? He's like, yeah, actually, I kind of am.
Did she feed him?
Yeah, she fed him.
What did they eat?
Well, I'm not sure what they ate. But
ice cream?
Remember, they go in the kitchen. He's like, hey, what the hell happened to my cabinets? And she's like, yeah, a deer broke in. So apparently that means that a deer actually did break in. Although I still maintain Kevin was the one who screwed it up.
However, Kevin Sr. was like, you know, but it didn't seem like too crazy for him. And mm-hmm. So he's on level with what's going on with these animals.
Like, he probably gets it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he knows what's happening.
Like, he might be talking to animal spirits on the other side. And they're like, yes, the bear spirit told me.
I don't think he's an Indian warrior. I'm sorry.
Like Punky Brewster. Goodness.
How many Punky Brewster references can we make in one episode?
Maybe the world is blind.
Hey, how cute was it? Oh my God.
I know that whole jam, man.
Don't even do
it. Oh, just a little unkind. Don't know. Anyway, so.
How cute was it when the grandfather was like, and she's opening the fridge, and he's like, hey, don't get trapped in there.
Oh, really cute. P.S., can you get me some tranquilizers?
I know. How about $200? You got those?
What kind of granddaughter does he think she is? But luckily, they did have lots of meds, so he wanted to try to medicate this dog.
Well, before we get onto that, I just wanted to say also, I love how she was like, hey, how'd you know that I was in the fridge? And he's like, well, you know, I just kind of ran out, and I heard some idiots screaming out of the refrigerator. And she's like, do you really expect me to believe that? And he says, no. Not really. And that just means that the voices told him that she was in there. And he knew where to go because he was told. And she's like, hey, do you hear voices now? And he's like, yeah, I do.
I hope Jill has the same voodoo, psychic, crazy people blood. I'd like to see her talk to these people.
I don't know.
I'm going to save that for my theory.
I bet you because she does have the Garvey blood. Tom does not, as we all know.
No.
I bet you she probably is. She's got a little bit of screwed upness to her. I bet you she's got some like serious, like supernatural shit going on that she doesn't even know about yet.
All of a sudden, Kevin Jr. comes home to the rescue, and he's like, "Hey, Dad, let me put some, you know, cuffs on you."
I love that when he's like, "I borrowed your sweatshirt."
That was cute.
By the way, can I get that sweatshirt? Can someone please make an MPD sweatshirt for me somewhere?
Amy needs that sweatshirt.
She needs a lot more than just a sweatshirt.
She needs some sweatpants.
She needs a whole sweatsuit.
Yeah. So both of the Kevins are in the car and they're like starting to fight or whatever. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Sr.'s like, stop, look out. Because of course, like people idiots do in TV shows, they don't pay attention to the road. How the heck did Kevin Jr. not notice that there was a wall of Guilty Remnant people standing in the streets holding these signs that said, don't save them? And we ended up finding out that these Save Them signs with Gladys's face, a.k.a. mom hair.
Yeah.
With Save Them, Matt and his friends, Reverend Matt, they've been making them. So very nice. So Kevin Sr. jumps and he's like running through this crazy mass of people. And Kevin Jr. is running after him, bumps into, and by bumps, I mean like body checks pretty much, Patty. And she gets helped by Meg and by Lori. And they all give Kevin this really like judgy look.
Oh, they gave him some serious stank eye. And they made it a point to show this, by the way. Kevin walking past all three of them and really kind of not giving a shit. And then you see Lori kind of come up and Meg and you see the stank eye. Do you think Lori is hurt by this?
Oh my gosh, of course. Of course she is. She's like, he didn't even notice me.
Do you think Kevin, because he did look back. I mean, he did show concern because, you know, obviously we saw that. He must have seen Lori.
Now, I don't know. I don't know if he did. I just know that Kevin would feel bad if he pushed someone down.
Well, not when he's chasing after his crazy dad.
He would feel a little bad for pushing somebody.
I don't know.
And he does. He knows that his wife is in there. So, yeah, maybe he gave a little look back. Anyway, loses his dad. Oh, well, you lost him. So Kevin comes home, and that's when, you know, Amy and Kevin have this stupid conversation. She just needs a freaking sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. And Kevin goes outside, feeds the dogs, and finds this peanut butter jar full of money with a note saying, you know, here you go, Reverend. So it leads him to Reverend Matt. And Reverend Matt is like, listen, I got connections. I'm going to hook you and your dad up, and we're going to go to a diner. So both of the Kevins meet at a diner, thanks to the help of Matt. Why is Matt, like, hiding Kevin Sr., by the way?
I think they're buddies. I think they had a previous relationship. I mean, obviously they did. I mean, he's the one, Sr.
Leaving lots of money.
Leaving lots of money for the Reverend, and specifically for the Reverend, as we had been reminded in this episode, just specifically for him. So what is the relationship between the two? Maybe he's just like his buddy. Maybe
the voices are telling him. Maybe they're kind of in cahoots, these voices.
Maybe Senior is like looking at Matt and that's his only friend, the only person that kind of believes him. You know, maybe he gave guidance.
I don't know. And where did Kevin Senior get all of that money?
That's the thing. The note said, you deserve this. Something tells me that this was money that was given to Senior to prevent Matt from giving out information about people.
I don't even
know. Matt didn't want to take it, but Senior's like, look, it's not mine. I can't take this anymore. Maybe they were working together. Maybe Senior was giving Matt information initially.
Ooh, I could dig that.
Yeah, maybe he's got all this information at first. He gave Matt the tools, right?
Yep.
And now Matt's going off and doing his own thing, and the first person they brought down was the judge.
I love it.
I think that's a good idea.
I like that. So the Kevins are hanging out at the diner, and Kevin's father, Kevin Sr., says, I wanted to keep you out of this. And he keeps like looking off, and I loved the shots when he was like hearing the voices and you would actually just see Kevin Sr.'s reflection. And he's like, I know, I got it. I'm trying to talk to him. Oh my God. Like, I would love to have just watched this conversation of a crazy man talking with the voices in their minds. And he says that he tries to change their minds, but they wouldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And he gives Kevin this May 1972 copy of National Geographic magazine. And he says, all right, what am I supposed to do this? Well, you just need to accept it. Did that just mean that Kevin Jr. needed to hold it? Like, what is up with this magazine? Are you going to read it? Do you need to highlight through it? But what I loved is that Kevin Sr. said, you know, something happened 3 years ago and you can't hide from it anymore. Your services are being requested. Hey, Sassy, this is your purpose. And this is your invitation. So this is your purpose. And something happened 3 years ago that coincides with these crazy voices in Kevin Sr.'s head. Mm-hmm. Once again, I'm still sticking to aliens.
I can't go with aliens. I really can't.
I know you can't, but listen.
I'm not going to amplify on this because it kind of goes along with my sudden theory.
All
week.
Right.
What I do like, though, and I can give you a tease. Senior says to Junior, I know you think I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, brother, I'm not. I ain't crazy. And I really wonder if he really isn't crazy.
If Kevin Jr.?
Senior isn't crazy.
Oh, I totally don't believe he's crazy.
So, I don't know, but let's move on. Let's move on. Where'd you go? This is getting in my sudden theory too.
Oh, goodness.
Sudden
week. Okay. So, Kevin Jr. is really sad. He's like, Dad, I needed you. You went crazy. I need your help. And Kevin Sr. is like, listen, buddy, this is your purpose. This is what you're supposed to do.
Oh, and he says, oh, I have a purpose now?
Yeah, he was totally offended. They get into a fight.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're tearing like the pages of National Geographic. Kevin Sr. like throws this big hissy fit. Like, whatever. If you don't want this, yeah. Fine. And he's like ripping it apart like a little
piss pot. Just stay asleep, will ya?
Yes.
Stay asleep. That's fine. I'll just get rid of it.
Go to sleep. This reminded me when Bethany Frankel is fighting in the New York Housewives.
I knew that
and
was
they're
coming.
On vacation. Oh, this is all I kept thinking. I pictured pregnant Bethany Frankel. Go to sleep. Eat your gummy bears. Oh, such a good, probably my favorite scene ever. I don't usually watch trashy TV. Freaking love that scene. It was great. So,
I think Kevin, didn't he say something along the lines, Junior said, you left me when I needed you.
Yeah.
So when did he need him?
Like this whole bloody time.
Was it after the departure? Was it when?
These past 3 years, the departure happened. Mm-hmm. His dad went crazy. So he suddenly had to become the chief, which he probably wasn't ready for. He had a broken relationship with his wife who joined the GR. And then his son runs away. It's like every single bad thing that can happen happened. And his dad left him.
Yeah.
So that was not cool.
And he follows it up with, you know your responsibility to Junior. And that makes you a coward. Because Junior's telling, look, I got my family, I got my things, I got responsibilities. I'm not going to abandon my family like you did.
You do not call a cop a coward.
No, you don't do that.
You know what Kevin needs?
What?
Sex.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Okay. I don't really know how I feel about this. So Kevin goes and gets spotted by the guilty remnant and Meg, and he just runs inside and he's like, let's do this, Nora. And they have sex. I didn't love this sex. Oh, whatever. And then they're cuddling, which was really, really cute. And he says, I think I might be going crazy. And Nora says, you've come to the right place. Now, if that isn't a match made in heaven, I don't know what is. Match.com should totally set these two up in a commercial.
I know.
Right?
Have the music going.
I think I might be crazy. Well, you've come to the right place. Thanks, Match.com. Ding. I like to have people shoot me. I like to kill dogs. Great. Wow.
Match made in heaven.
Like, and I love how we're really rooting for this couple. Like, we are just so excited. We're like, yeah, you had sex. Oh, how cute. You've been on multiple dates. Look at you defeat the GR. And in my mind, I'm like, please do not procreate because your kid would be so messed up. Whatever. Anyways.
I like the sex scene. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was, I thought it was loving. I thought it was warm, but I also thought it was very passionate and like aggressive. And I also think that it wasn't necessarily Kevin who was the aggressive one. You saw his hesitation. You saw him be like, yeah, dude, this probably ain't a good idea. And Nora was the one who furthered the sex.
I don't know. I just kind of thought Kevin had a bad day and he had to take it out in one way or another, which I get. But like, really, that's your first way? Couldn't you have like rented a hotel room and had some flower petals? How unromantic, Kevin.
He just takes her in her house and throws her on the bed.
Because he's angry because he got into a fight and slapped by his dad. Anyway, after Kevin, you know, blows off some steam, he heads on home and Jill and Amy are once again eating. Damn the youth's metabolism.
I know.
Can't even handle it. I used to eat so much ice cream when I was younger, and I didn't care.
Not anymore.
I wish I could. I'm lactose intolerant. Oh, gosh.
That's not a pretty scene, trust me.
Anyway, and another National Geographic with that awesome standing bear is right on his table, and he freaks out, and Jill's like, whatever. Yeah. Grandpa needed me to order it. And Kevin throws away the magazine, but what you don't see, so he's like looking at it and you see him kind of reach down and you don't know if he reached down to pick the magazine back up or if he reached down to shut the garbage.
I don't know. I think it was to pick it back up. And the reason why I say that is because if you remember when Junior was dropping Senior back off at the insane asylum, they have him walking down that hallway and he's talking and he's saying, again, I know you think I'm crazy, but the problem is, they're not going to let you off that easy, son. The voices aren't going to let him off that easy.
Oh my God, I hate...
And I think he knows this. And I wonder if he sees this as serendipitous, that this thing... he's pissed off, obviously, and he's like, no, I don't got a fucking problem. He's talking to Jill and all that other stuff. And she runs off, whatever, does her own thing with Amy. But by the way, wearing the same exact freaking outfit. Did you notice that? And they had the same haircut, same color hair, same outfit. It was weird. It was almost like...
Best friends do that. Friends totally. They become twins without meaning to. It happens all the time.
Well, what I'm getting at is I think that Junior saw this as serendipitous. He sees this thing back in his house, even though the other previous copy was thrown away, and now it's there again. I think he's picking it back up again.
Well, I think so, too. I love reading National Geographic, so I hope he did. Now that it's a collector's item, especially.
All right, can we actually finally just, I've been trying to avoid this as much as I can, but I can't anymore. Let's just talk about Tom and Christine and Wayne, and let's get it over with, because I hate this freaking storyline.
Oh my gosh, I love Tom.
Do you really?
I do.
Ugh.
I love Tom. I feel so bad for Tom. I feel like Tom is just every lost soul. And he's not drinking the Kool-Aid. And I like that about him. And he's not crazy. Mm-hmm. Everyone in this show is bloody crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, who is not crazy? Ping Pong Boys? Maybe?
Yeah, that's just because they're dumb.
Well, they're... who else? Who do you think is not crazy? Exactly. Tom.
They're all crazy.
Except Tom.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
So I'm rooting for Tom. I feel like Tom, something is very, very special about him. Mm-hmm. And even if it's just from my point of view that I'm like rooting for the sane person. So Tom is just, he's hungry and he and Christine, I don't know where they're living. If it's like before we thought they were YMCA and then they got kicked out when the naked guy
came out.
They're
living in some
weird
random place in Gary, Indiana, which does not look like a fun place, by the way.
Anyone else who loves musicals as much as I do, hopefully you are singing Gary, Indiana from The Music Man. There is literally a song called Gary, Indiana.
Well, Gary, Indiana
Gary
sucks.
Gary, Indiana, Gary, Indiana. Anyway, it does. And that is why The Music Man goes there and tricks everyone to buy instruments. Well, spoiler alert. Anyway, so Tom and Christine are hanging out there. Christine, holy smokes. This is how we check out how much time has passed because she is now 8 months pregnant. Last time we checked in, she was what, 8 weeks, 12 weeks pregnant?
At most.
So she is there and her belly has gotten pretty big and she is sick. And why is Tom making her like clam chowder? If girlfriend doesn't feel good, the last thing I want to eat is clam chowder.
Maybe she had a real hankering for it. Like, remember how you, when you were super pregnant, you wanted like tacos and Skittles?
Yeah, and buffalo chicken calzones.
That's true. Maybe she wanted clam chowder.
I don't know. He's not a very good cook. He should have just gotten a microwave, like a Hot Pocket.
Oh, God, that was really bad how he burned himself.
Ouch. And anyway, so he gets a phone call from Ween who says, "Hey, Tom." Wait, no, he doesn't say, "Hey, Tom." He's like, "Who's this?" And don't you hate that? Like when someone calls you and you're like, "You freaking called me."
I think
what do you mean, who is this? Ween, stop tripping and get out of those brown underwear. And this is Tom. And he's like, "Oh, hey, Tom."
Oh, yeah, that's right.
How's Christine?
Yeah.
How much money do you have left? Cool. Please put half of that, a.k.a. $3,000 cash, underneath the mailbox. Okay, says Tom. And he, like, leaves sick Christine. Hopefully he turned off the stove and isn't burning any more clam chowder.
I love how he just took off. Didn't even say anything. Just like, yep. Yeah,
because he's all set. You know, Christine is like, she's freaking annoying. She's just this whining pregnant girl. And I, you know what, ladies? You just can't whine just because you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. All right? You need to grow up, Christine. Christine's young. I guess that's why. So then Tom totally creeps on the guy who picks up the money, follows him back. And it was like, oh, what was it? Tom Cruise movie? Oblivion?
Yes.
It was like Oblivion. Like when Tom Cruise meets the second Tom Cruise and the second Tom Cruise wife.
Spoiler alert, by the way, yeah. If you haven't seen it.
Oh my God, I like, totally just gave away the entire movie.
Oh,
anyway,
crap.
It's like there's clones and his mind is blown and they're literally doing the same exact thing, living the same exact life, but it's another Tom Cruise. So that's what happens with this Tom, as he goes and there's some hippy dippy guy taking care of a pregnant Asian girl.
At first I thought it was Christine. I was like, whoa, Christine, how the hell did you get here?
Oh, I knew that wasn't her because this girl had like a scowl on her face and she wasn't all sweaty. Christine was so sweaty.
That's true.
Gosh, Christine, you need to get some ice, girl. You got ice water. She doesn't need hot clam chowder. She needs a Slurpee.
She needs some Ben and Jerry's cookie dough ice cream.
Yes. Goodness, Tom. She's sweaty. And so the reason Tom goes in is because he thinks Wayne's there and he is guns ablazing.
Oh, he's
pissed. with his like muscles. He doesn't have a gun. And he's like, "Where's Wayne? Where's Wayne?" And the girl, the pregnant woman, is like, "He knows about Wayne." So that's what throws these people for a loop.
Sure.
Come to find out, it's another hippie guy with another pregnant Asian girl.
Doing and blow.
Because he's happy, I guess. Like, because Ween hugged me, now I can do drugs and just not take my job seriously. Because he obviously used Ween's money on all of his drugs.
Yeah.
Like, you would probably still have $6,000 left if you weren't doing drugs.
Yeah.
Anyway, they get, the girl gets so mad. Because the guys are sitting there shooting the shit, saying, "Oh yeah, Ween said this girl is everything."
Mm-hmm.
Word for word,
yeah,
gets it all done.
Her baby, her son, is the bridge.
Yes.
And then she's like,
she freaks out. She grabs a gun.
Oh my God.
Christine.
Hell hath no fury.
Seriously? She is jealous. And you know what I want to say to this girl?
It's the pregnancy hormones.
No. It's just crazy girl. She should realize Ween was banging everyone at the ranch. Like, why are you jealous?
Maybe he didn't tell all of them that he was banging all of
them. You know what I think it was? I think because he told her and he told Christine, "Your baby is special."
Okay, yep.
So she probably didn't care that everyone is getting banged, but she thought that her baby was going to be special.
So this makes me feel like Ween is just full of shit. I mean, I really do believe that he gives magic hugs. I truly do. I feel like he does. But every single bit about him elsewise is all full of it.
I don't think he's full of it. I think he probably knows he needs to have a son. And rather than just thinking like...
He's like hedging his bets?
Yeah. I mean, heck, if you get to have a baby, why not spread your seeds everywhere? And, you know, if 10 of them, maybe one of them will be the right one.
Yeah.
I don't know. So how many girls do you think there are out there?
Oh, there's got to be... you know what? You know there's two, obviously. And I remember that the scene in the pilot, there was like a bunch of little Asian girls running around.
Oh, all by the pool.
All by the pool.
They had gummy worms.
I know, right? And Tom had keen eyes for Christine. He gave the gummy worms to her. So there's got to be at least, what, six, seven? Let's just think of that, right?
Yeah, hopefully if they made it past Affleck, guys.
I can't believe you're still calling him Affleck.
The thing that I got nervous about, and I didn't think about it till after the show, is the woman, when she was crying, she said, "He said it would be my baby. He's the only one." Meaning the baby. Meaning that she thought the baby was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tom gets shot in the hand. In the same spot, but on the other hand.
No, it's left hand. Same hand.
The other, the other thing I want to talk about, what's up with mailboxes? And you know how they like really focus on the U.S. Postal Service thing? So both he and his dad had an interesting interaction with an identical looking mailbox with the same kind of graffiti, just in different places. And then they both get hurt in the left hand in that very sensitive spot right there in between.
That sucks, right?
Yeah. I mean, you pretty much move that all the time. Tom is a beast. He drove home with that wounded hand. If I got shot in the hand, like Tom in Downton Abbey, he got shot in the hand and he got out of the Great War. He got out of World War just for being shot in the hand. Tom's able to drive and everything. Well, all right.
Spoiler alert, by the way.
Yeah.
Again. Way to keep ruining shows and movies for people.
Whatevs. People need to keep up with this, all right? I'm not doing anything that isn't super current.
What I like about this was Tom was getting the phone call from the phone.
Wayne.
And it must have been Wayne. And what did he do? He took that phone and he freaking jacked it on the wall on this, like, this figure of a shadow.
Why did he do that?
Because he's pissed. He realizes that his mission that he was given by Holy Wayne, it's full of shit.
No, it's just not very special. It's not full of shit. It's just that he and Christine
are not special. She isn't special.
Yeah.
Necessarily. And he's sitting there saying, I've put all my faith into this guy. I've waited around for this guy. I've done my job. And this is how he repays me? I've had enough. Yeah. I'm done. I've lost my faith in this guy. He's out. And you've seen that happen multiple times. But each time it's about to happen, Wayne or something calls right at that very moment. And Tom gets sucked back in again. But at this time, when he finally gets proof that there's other things happening other than just what, you know, is happening.
Yeah.
He says, screw it. I'm out. See you later. I'm done.
Speaking of screw it, I hated how Wayne asked Tom if he was sleeping with Christine.
Yeah. And this is why Wayne didn't know if it was Tom. Because he must be calling multiple people all the time to be like, hey, checking up on my girl. And maybe he's losing his shit a little bit. Maybe he's tired. He told Nora, hey, I'm tired. I got things going on. Maybe he's losing it a little bit.
He looked a little sleepy.
And like, you know, he looked tired, looked run down. And maybe he's like, he's calling people without realizing who he's really calling. And that's why he didn't know who it was.
He probably has them on speed dial. He probably has like 10 girls.
Yeah.
So one is speed dial number one.
Yeah.
One is speed dial number two.
And he's forgetting who's one, who's two.
Of course. Oh, yeah. I forgot who was my speed dial. You were number five because five is my favorite number.
Yay.
But aside from that, I don't know who was one or two. My mom or my dad.
So what do we find out? Christine gives birth
on her own. What a champ.
Nailed it.
So do you think she was actually sick before or in labor? Because he really wasn't gone long.
She was in labor.
Yeah.
She was in labor.
Yeah. No wonder she didn't want to eat clam chowder.
Who would want to eat clam chowder in labor?
Nobody. I could tell you that.
I'll tell you that. So
she had a water birth. How preciously hippie was that?
Oh, my God.
Not only a water birth, but a home water birth. I mean, that is what Ricky Lake wants every woman to do in the business of being born. So she pulls up this baby, and it's supposed to be like this kind of nice moment. And she's like, it's a girl.
Yeah.
And you can't really tell if she's happy. And that's when it clicked with me, like, oh, the other Asian girl was saying he is supposed to be the bridge. So I don't think Wayne is going to be cool with a girl.
No.
I think he wanted a half Asian, half African American baby boy. Sorry, Christine.
He wanted a Blasian boy.
Yes.
That's what he wanted. He basically wanted Tiger Woods.
Yes.
But he didn't get Tiger Woods.
No, he didn't. Sorry, Wayne. The last thing we had to do was talk about what it's like to find out that your ex is sleeping around. You know, it sucks. Like, Blake and I are married. We're happily married. But, you know, when you find out that someone, like back in the olden days, when you're single and you broke up with someone,
oh, yeah. And
then you find out that they moved on, they got a new boyfriend or girlfriend, or you see their Facebook status or their picture, and now they have a boyfriend or girlfriend in that picture, you get a little pissed because
sure.
You're like, I'm single.
What the hell?
Why did you get to move on before me? This isn't fair. So I think Meg was like, hey, Lori, wanted to give you a heads up. Mind you, this is like scribbled with a Sharpie.
Yeah.
Your husband is having sex with this girl. And all Lori responds is so ? Like, so what?
Let's just also talk about this too, because what Meg was saying, it wasn't, oh, hey, I want to give you a heads up. No. It was anger. It was visceral. It was, he is fucking her. Like, underlined, underscored, fucking bolded, italicized. She was making it a point. Like, she was pissed. And I think this is what is happening to Meg. Yeah, she's part of the GR, but she's still
a poser.
She's still, yeah, she's kind of a poser. She still feels too much. I also think Lori does feel, because she puts that down there. And you know what? It's kind of one of those, it's one of those events where it's like you hear something and it bothers you, but you try to put up a facade like, yeah, so. I really think that's what was happening. I really think Lori was bothered. Meg was bothered. But Meg was the one that actually acted on it. And Lori is trying to put up the facade that, yeah, it don't matter. But she's pissed off inside. I feel like she is.
Meg's like a sidekick girl that tries to fight other people's battles.
Yeah.
Like she just needs to move out of the way a little bit and let Lori and Kevin figure out their own things. So great recap, Blake. A lot of stuff happened in this episode. Lots of big things.
I noticed a couple of big themes in this episode. There's a lot of meat to this episode. I'm sure we probably missed some stuff, and if we did, we'll catch it next week.
I think it was a steak. Was it like a thin steak?
Lot to talk about. We probably could have split this episode up into two. The thing that I noticed most was that there was a lot of parallels in this episode. A lot of parallels, you know, between Tom,
the mailbox,
and yeah, Tom and Kevin. Tom is taking care of a woman with a child that is not his own. He gets shot in the same place as Kevin. You see the mailboxes. Kevin is being somehow told about the mailbox in Tom, like in his dream. He's not just dreaming that because he's dreaming it. It's purposely there. You also see people being trapped all the time, right? You saw Jill being trapped in the fridge. You see Kevin Sr. being trapped in the insane asylum. You see Kevin being trapped in his own mind. You see Tom being trapped by Wayne. It's all trappings. And people are trying to break out. Dogs being trapped into the mailbox.
Oh, man, you're getting deep.
No, I am getting deep. And I'm going to go one even further.
Okay.
Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
I want you to bear with me here.
Rawr. The bear on the cover.
I was waiting for that.
Like, I just did like the claw thing, just so you guys know, with my hand.
This episode reminded me of Philosophy 101.
I thought you were just about to say Felicity.
I do love J.J. Abrams.
Do, do, do. Do, 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 do.
Do, do, do.
Oh, Kerry Russell. Anyway, oh, philosophy, not Felicity.
Not Felicity. Philosophy 101. What tipped me off to this was the shadow that Tom throws the phone against the wall to break the phone, right? And then you have Kevin Sr. talking about, you got to wake up. Everybody's got to wake up. Wake the fuck up. Stop being asleep. Stop putting your thoughts into something that isn't real. And you know what came to my mind when I saw the shadows? I heard wake up. You remember the Allegory of the Cave by Plato?
No.
You don't remember this?
No. Where would I have learned this?
In college.
I was a music major.
Oh, God. All right,
I didn't
whatever.
To care about Plato.
Yeah, you didn't have a liberal arts education, did you? I did.
Yes, I did.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
We just don't all have to take philosophy and be like, ooh, look at my ideas.
Smart.
No, because you're not. You're just like talking about your feelings and things you think about.
All right. Real quick. The Allegory of the Cave. It's a story told by Plato in the guise of Socrates. And Socrates is out there saying there are these prisoners in a cave. And they have never seen the outside light. What they see is shadows coming from the outside that the sun is creating. And they believe that the shadows are the real things. That the shadows are what's real. What they don't realize is that they're only seeing us just a shadow. But one day, one of the guys gets out of the cave and he goes out into the light, this blinding light, it hurts his eyes. And he sees the real things that are creating the shadows. And he realizes, holy shit, everything I've been paying attention to, everything that I thought was real was fake. What's outside this cave in the light, that is real. And he goes back to the cave and he tries to tell people, everything you guys are seeing is fake. And what do? They try to kill him.
Well, he was a freaking idiot for going back into the cave. But you're free.
Well, he's trying to enlighten people. And that's the idea. Socrates is trying to say that philosophers are enlighteners. They create life. They create and they discover life. And I'm bringing this all back to this. You have Kevin Sr. saying everybody's got to wake up and that there's a bridge. Who's the bridge? What's the bridge? The bridge to reality. And everybody is just kind of living their lives. They're not knowing what's real. And it's because of the departure. Are people not paying attention to real life? And you see these people, especially like Kevin Jr., starting to wake up. And that's what he's being told by these voices, to wake these people up, to show them the real life.
And bringing it back to the cave allegory, you see Jill getting out of the refrigerator, and it was a blinding white light. You see Kevin waking up from a daze, and he was kind of jarred by it, just like the cave prisoners. Even Tom getting jarred by that phone call from Wayne. He decides, screw it, I'm going to just throw this phone against the wall, against that shadow. And then also, again, you see Kevin Sr. getting jarred and going back into the nut house. Matt referred to this a few episodes ago when he said it's easier to do nothing than speak the truth, truth being capital T truth. And that's a hard thing to do, speaking the truth, capital T truth. In fact, it's so hard that Kevin Sr. advises Kevin Jr. to not do that. He's like, people are going to come help you, and you may want to just keep that on the down low. And that's what Socrates is referring to when he says that the prisoner, should he come back and tell everybody about the true nature of the real things in the light, that he would be killed because it's too jarring for everybody that haven't seen the light. Even right before they left the insane asylum, Matt refers to a quote from the Quran about Joseph. Kevin interrupts him. He ends up saying, said the father, my dear son, relate not thy vision to thy brothers, lest they concoct a plot against thee, for Satan is to man an avowed enemy. It all keeps coming back to not speaking the truth. And why? What is the truth? Who is saying this truth? Certainly not Wayne. It doesn't seem to be that way. Is it Matt? Or is it, in fact, Kevin Sr.? Is he speaking capital T truth? I don't know. And I really feel like this episode was based around that allegory. And I'm going to get even further into that in my sudden theory of the week. All right, kid, what do you say we get into the listener feedback? The first email comes from Mark. He asks, did anyone notice that when Kevin looks through the scope of the rifle when he is shooting, like when he meets up with Dean the dog killer, that it was the scene from the pilot episode of him shooting the dogs? He thinks, he still believes that Dean is not real. Well, he's real, but his theory is that Dean is a persona that Kevin Jr. has either like thrust upon somebody, that he's like kind of like bipolar. And it probably would be induced by medication mixed with alcohol that he's been taking this entire time. And he also thinks that seeing a dead Lori in the back of the truck signifies the end of Kevin and Lori's marriage, and that he has a newfound contempt for her. So I love this idea. I don't know if it's a persona put on random person, but I think that Kevin is definitely succumbing to his drug and alcohol state. The second one is from Wimmert. Wimmert says he knows why Lori was blowing that whistle in Matt's face at the end of Gladys.
Why?
He thinks that Lori is fed up with her own grief for the loss of her family and the loss of Gladys. And she wants the situation to end, but she can't express her words and she can't express her stress. She can't talk to her family and explain. She can't make anyone wake up and deal with the reality, so she's frustrated as hell. Then Matt shows up. And he's, you know, holding on tightly to his beliefs and his religion. And of course, as we all know, the guilty remnant don't believe in any of that crap. It's all just a waste of their time. So she thinks that Lori thinks that Matt exemplifies all that's wrong with this world. And she feels like her nightmare is never ending. So what does she do? She takes out her frustration on Reverend Matt the only way she knows how, which is blowing that whistle in his face as loud as she freaking can. Thanks for the emails, guys. Now it's on to the tweets.
Kate Hope Day says, The Leftovers has a lot of heart, and that's why it's so often heartbreaking. Can other dark dramas say the same?
No, I think Breaking Bad could, but that's about it. Chavis says, I don't know, hearing voices is pretty crazy, but when the voices are always right in a world where people just disappeared, is that actually crazy?
I'm right there with you, buddy.
I think so. I don't think there is a kind of, I don't think there is crazy in this world. You have to at least open yourself up to the possibility that something else is happening.
I can't read this next one. You can do it. The hashtag. I can't read that hashtag.
Please say it. Please do it. Read it.
Okay, I'll read the part and then you can do the hashtag. The Mindster tweeted, anyone else watching The Leftovers and wondering what's in the National Geographic? Spoiler alert.
Hashtag saggy titties. Oh, by the way, real quick, what was in the that issue of the National Geographic? The major stories on the front cover were Yellowstone's 100th birthday.
Oh.
Cairo, troubled capital of the Arab world. Living in a Japanese village. The spider that lives underwater. And have excavations on the island of Thera solve the riddle of the Minoans.
I think I've read about that spider that lives underwater. Doesn't it like eat bubbles?
Yeah. It lives underwater and it sucks in the air from the bubbles that's created underwater. And a lot of people think that that's referencing Wayne, that he's living underground and he's living off the life and the air of everybody else. And he's like this spider. He's sucking everything out. And if you noticed, Christine in her like laborious state...
Yeah.
She mentions something about spiders underwater.
No.
Yes, she does.
What's a Minoan?
The Minoans were this group of people that lived on the island of Crete. And
in Greece?
Crete is separate from Greece, but yes.
Didn't I go to Crete?
You did not go to Crete.
Never mind.
We went to the Mediterranean on our honeymoon. Anyway, the Minoans disappeared out of nowhere. They just up and left. Nobody knows what happened. So a lot of people think that that is how it is relating to The Departed in this particular magazine. The one that stands out, the one story that stands out is Cairo, troubled capital of the world. Now, this is a little bit of a spoiler here. So it's a very minor spoiler. If you don't want to hear it, fast forward about a minute. The spoiler that you were having is that the next episode title is entitled Cairo. I looked it up.
That's not a big enough spoiler to fast forward
a minute.
Well,
some people want to avoid that. And I promised all of our listeners that I would not...
Spoiler, I think they would expect spoiler if you gave them like info from the books. Giving someone a title to a show, they can
handle
that.
Yeah, but some people are very serious about that, and I don't want to screw it up. And why is this also important? Because when Kevin starts to fall asleep a little bit in his chair and he turns on his little walkie-talkie,
mm-hmm.
One of the words that comes out of it was Cairo.
Are you sure? Because it sounded like this to me.
I'm telling you, I looked it up. I read about it. It was Cairo.
Yeah. You know what? I could write that it also said Santa loves cotton candy.
Listen, I'm just trying to tell you that was what was said. I read it. It's been confirmed. It is what it is. All right, let's move on. SJS Turkey tweeted out to us, don't play in old refrigerators, boys and girls. Not even after a rapture-like event. Yep, that's right. Definitely. Don't play in refrigerators. Did anyone else think of Indiana Jones, by the way? The fourth one? When he nuked the fridge and he got in the fridge and the nuclear bomb went off and he got sprayed?
No, I just thought about Punky Brewster.
I thought about Indiana Jones.
Katie McNamara tweeted, speak Spanish to me, Justin Theroux. Ooh. And God Casta?
Yep.
Said, when I die, I want them to play the credit sequence of The Leftovers on loop at my funeral. Wow, you are like morbid.
Maybe he means the music.
The music is pretty.
It is very pretty.
Okay.
Look Who It Is tweeted out to us, Sunday at 10, The Leftovers, once again proving they're better than you.
Aww.
It's a good show, man. It's getting better with each passing episode, too.
It is. Lori43 says, in library, Kevin speaks Spanish. The janitor quotes the dad. Guess that means the dad also communicates in Spanish? Wow!
Apparently.
Whoa!
All right, let's do the voicemails.
Hey, Marianne Blake. It's Shakita, a.k.a. Serena6783. I was giving my thoughts about the National Geographic May 1972. As far as I know, that there's a few articles on the cover, but there's two that would make sense. The Minoan tribe, they disappeared, so he could have been referencing that. Or there's an article about Cairo, and I saw that the next episode name is Cairo. So either or, we never know. Looking forward to your show. Have a good night. Bye.
Excellent detective work there, Shakita. I really appreciate it. Thank you for calling in. Next up is Missy. All right, girl, what do you got?
Hi, Mary and Blake. It's Missy from New Orleans, also known as Ixronius from Twitter. I'm calling because I have been rewatching a lot of the episodes lately, mainly because I want to go see the neat little things people catch that I hear about on your podcast. So while I was watching the episode Two Boats and a Helicopter, or episode 3, I was looking, honestly, for the pigeon sequence, which someone pointed out, first one pigeon, then two pigeons, then three pigeons. Well, in doing so, I came to the dream sequence that Matt had after he was hit in the face with the stone towards the end of the episode. And I caught two things that I thought were pretty interesting, and I'd like to hear what you think about them. One was that for the part of the dream sequence where the house is burning down and he's holding Nora's hand and they're talking, there's a quick flash to a fire truck, the fire truck in front of him with two firefighters standing. And it's happening so fast, you hear actually the crash of the scene coming up right behind it. I'm all over the place right now, I apologize. But in a quick flash, the scene goes to the fire truck with the fireman standing, and between them is an upside-down painting, and I'm pretty sure it is the same painting that is hanging in Matt's bedroom, which is of Job. Also, for the scene where Matt is in bed with his wife and it flashes to Lori being on top of him, very quickly you see two images of Fight Club where you'd see Tyler Durden pop in on scenes, but anyway, I could make out Gladys holding a cigarette in her hand for one of the photos. I couldn't make out the other. And I have a little theory about that, that it was kind of a premonition-type dream about Matt figuratively, being fucked by the GR. I'm sorry, guys, if you don't like the curse words, but I don't know a better way to put it. Anyway, y'all keep it up. I really love listening to it, and y'all have a great day. Bye.
Thanks, Missy. And just so you know, don't ever, ever be discouraged or embarrassed about that kind of language. We up here in the North, we kind of like that stuff. So, hey, at least I know I do. So that's all that really matters, of course. But in terms of what you caught, an unbelievable catch on your part, especially with the painting and Gladys and Matt getting fucked by the GR, 100% true, girlfriend. Definitely getting fucked by the GR. And there's a lot of hate brewing there. That's why I kind of don't buy Matt changing and getting better and making a better person of himself. It just doesn't feel right to me. But anyway, Missy has provided a screen capture of what she was speaking about in terms of that upside-down painting. I will be putting that up in the show notes for all of our listeners. You guys are beautiful listeners to take a look at. Thank you guys for calling in. How about the tweet of the week?
The tweet of the week comes from Courtney Stalling. She said, "The greatest writing trick Damon Lindelof has ever played was getting us to read old copies of National Geographic." You know what? I bet Damon, like, loved this episode of National Geographic, guys. And I bet you he like, owned a stockpile of them, was like, "All right, how do I get rid of all of these and make a lot of money?"
He's the one selling them all on eBay.
Yes. That's, there we go. Good, great tweet, Courtney. All right, everyone. It is time for the sudden theory of the week. Blake, what do you have?
Sudden theory. Senior is not crazy. In fact, everything he's hearing is totally real. I'm not sure who's talking to him. Maybe the departed is talking to him. Maybe God is talking to him.
Maybe aliens.
I don't know. Maybe one of God's messengers is speaking to him. But sure as shit, this guy ain't crazy. And he ain't crazy because he knows about the Jill being in the refrigerator.
I'm sure he probably knew about the Departed long before they left. The problem that Senior is having is that while he may be getting this information for real, he doesn't know what to do with it. He doesn't know how to handle it. And he kind of tweaks out a little bit. Because when you start hearing the truth from, you know, God or whatever, you're supposed to freak out. You're, as a human, you're not supposed to be able to handle that. And these things that are talking to Senior are trying to talk to Junior as well. But they're not getting through to him because of all the pills and the alcohol. And that's why Senior keeps saying to him, dude, you got to get off those pills. They're messing with your brain. You got to wake up. Because he knows that the voices are trying to get to Junior. So what's the overall arcing theme here? Kevin realizes, Junior realizes he's going a little nuts. And we all laugh about it, I agree. But it's true, he's going nuts. He really is. Remember when Senior told Junior, they sent or are sending somebody to help you? Remember that? Like, it was either the first or second episode?
Oh, yeah, when he went to go visit him in the home?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We all thought it was Dean the dog killer. We all thought that Dean was fake. Well, turns out Dean ain't fake. Dean's real. What they sent was not Dean, it was Nora. Nora is there to help Kevin wake up. Kevin to become a real person. To get out of that brooding. To start living normally. Get off the pills. So that Kevin Jr. is the bridge. It's not Tom. It's not, what's his name's kids?
Wayne's
kids. This is all about Kevin. Kevin is the linchpin. Kevin knows what's happening. Kevin is the one who's going to put this all together. Junior. Not Wayne, we know it. He has too many kids. They're not special. Kevin is the one that's special. And Nora is the one that's been sent to help him.
Nice.
You like that?
I do. My sudden theory of the week is that Dean, aka random bald guy, shooting dog guy, is half the time real and is half the time Kevin.
Really?
Yeah, because I still don't believe, like, even in the dream sequence, and he was like, hey, I'm going to shoot a dog. I don't think he was there, but the dog was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes it's Kevin making it up that this guy is there. And I think that that the real guy, Dean, I don't think he's real. Like, he's not from Mapleton, and I think he's talking to some other voice people.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got another form of crazy, like, but bad side. So if Kevin's dad is the good side crazy, I mean, I'm not saying angels and demons. I'm not going there because I still don't feel that way about this show.
I don't think it's biblical in any way.
No,
I really don't.
But I think that that the dog guy, what little bits he is real, he's bad news.
Yep.
And that's my sun theory of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, let's close it out.
One of the easiest ways you can reach out to us is on our website. It's thelivingreminders.com.
You can also get us on Facebook at facebook.com/livingreminders.
And we are on Twitter. Our handle is Living Reminders. And we also want to mention to please tweet #RenewTheLeftovers. This is created by the Guilty Remnant podcast. Great idea. If you love this show, make sure that HBO knows this. So #RenewTheLeftovers.
Get us on email too at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Ladies and gents, we really, really love it when you send us some reviews and ratings on iTunes. It means the absolute world to us. So we want to send a huge shout out to the Sugar Man. Ooh, the Sugar Man. That's really nice. He said that this is a fun podcast that analyzes and explores the deeper mysteries of The Leftovers. He highly recommends it. Thank you so much, the Sugar Man. I'm going to give you a little yes. That review is helpful.
Yeah, thank you for everybody sending all those fantastic, kind words. We're humbled. We love them. It keeps us going. So please rate us and review us. And you know what? I also want to say, go out, listen to other podcasts for The Leftovers. Rate and review them. My recommendations are Jay and Jack and the Guilty Remnant podcast. I personally love, all of them are great, but I love listening to those guys. They're very nice people, very smart, informative. Go out and rate and review them too.
If you want to leave us a voicemail, please call our hotline. It's 503 454 503-454-6730. Once again, 503-454-6730. We'd like to hear your voices, especially if you have a different accent. That would be just really, really cool. And also, we want to let you know, if you want to hear more of us...
We have a couple of other podcasts.
We do. If you have a child, a baby, are pregnant, have a friend who has one, or if you just like to listen to Blake and I shoot the shit, you're going to want to check out ParentCast. It's a podcast dedicated to new parents, new babies, and their new lives together.
What's the other podcast we got?
The other podcast is for fans of Outlander. It's a new show on Stars. It just started this past weekend. It's time travel. It's fantasy. It is sexy, ladies and gentlemen. And it takes place in Scotland. And so that podcast is called Outlander Cast. I am done babbling. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mary.
I'm Blake.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week to the Living Reminders.